Okay, you ready?
Sure, let's go.
Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order. There's two handouts. There's the little email agenda that Tony had sent out, and then there's the copyright handout, which is a direct follow-up of the meeting that we had, the last meeting we had of the group, which was in December. We have a new participant, so Margot, do you want to just say hi and where you're coming from?
Hi, Margot.
Everyone know Margot, the electronic resources cataloger? And do you know everybody?
I work at the GIS Center with Jennifer.
Oh, okay. I'm working on the fifth floor with Myron.
Oh, okay.
I'm in charge of the GIS location. I'm the
You know Kyle? Okay. Just to recap, the Digital Resources Advisory Group is a coordination and advisory group. Its mission basically is to bring together people all across the organization that are in some way involved in digitizing or creating digital resources that are institutionally created, not things that we go and buy and license. Some libraries have everything, all of that activity happen in one department, like a digital center, and if that was the case, you wouldn't need as much of a coordinating committee. But where we have digitization occurring throughout the organization, this forum was put in place so that all the digitizers or people that are creating digital resources can benefit from closer coordination, resource sharing, expertise sharing, trading of information, and also if there's a need that the group identifies, they can become an advisory group to the library administration if we see that there's something that's needed or a hole that needs to be patched with respect. So just to recapture, especially for Margot's benefit, why we're here. The last meeting was not very well attended. I think there were only four of us. And this meeting is also, I see, not getting the benefit of full participation. All I can say is to ask the library administration to make sure that departments that could benefit from this kind of forum have some kind of participation, because most of what we talk about, the Digital Collection Center, is actually usually in pretty good shape, and it's the other departments that could really benefit from the information, and their ability to benefit from that is limited by whether they're participating or not. So all I can do is just ask the supervising ADs and the administrator to make sure that, you know, the participation is where it needs to be, because I can't push wet noodles.
Gail, should someone call BBC, the two people at BBC, and find out if they're...
I don't know if you want to slow down the meeting. We have a limited time slot today, or if it's just something to be mindful of.
Well, sometimes when
for the future.
I know that this is an advisory group, but it's my understanding that it's headed actually by you and or Tony falls in underneath there. And sometimes if you just send out another reminder.
I sent one out 2 days ago, and it specifically had Susan and Sarah on it.
Did you ask for anybody as a response, if you're going to be able to attend or not? Sometimes that helps too.
Okay. All I can say is that I don't know. With respect to the BBC people, their edition was more recent, and so maybe they're just not in the loop. But why, you know, we're not getting even Green Library participation,
well,
I can't
no,
address.
Well, they're in the loop email-wise.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we're missing how many people? We're missing Jamie, Sue, Jennifer.
Yeah.
Vicky.
Jamie's,
I mean, you've got major departments not present.
It's the departments that I can see as far as
right.
I can see.
Right. I mean, we've got GovDocs is missing, Special Collections.
Well, you're not going to get 100%. Jennifer.
No, but I'm just letting you know that I'm not going to do another copyright meeting, for example, not when we've done two. So this is the kind of information that if people don't get the benefit of, I'm just suggesting that it better be somewhere made available to other people, because I can't keep pushing a wet noodle. If they don't want the information, I'm going to pass out the handouts and we're going to go over it today,
well,
and I'm recording it so that people can, you know, catch up with what they've missed. But, you know, like in the case of copyright, Digital Collection Center is in very good shape. We know what we're doing and we have expertise. If there's other departments that aren't in that same shape, it's not going to get them any better off if they're not here. So I'm just letting you know that this is a copyright meeting that's a follow-up to the meeting we had in December, where we had, I think, two departments. Systems isn't here either. So I don't know, you know, how to address the larger issue, but I'm happy to continue carrying on with the, you know.
I don't see anybody on systems here.
George.
Well, George.
Is there a George here?
Yeah,
there is.
Yeah, overlooking it.
All right. Okay. So I'm just saying, you know, our ability to coordinate and advise is hampered the lower the participation, and I can't control that participation. I don't know what else, you know, at the level of a department head, I can do differently. But let's just carry on, if we may, with the business of the meeting and hope that other people have a chance to catch up. In December, we went over a beginning discussion of copyright. Those of us that were here recognized, I think we talked about the fact that copyright isn't just in one person's backyard. It affects just about every department in the library, and it certainly affects anybody that's doing digitization. Because by definition, digitization is reproduction. As soon as you reproduce somebody else's content, you're triggering rights issues. We talked about that, and we talked about the possible need to have a copyright policy library-wide so that everybody's using the same set of sensibilities. And we talked about it might be helpful if we had some kind of a handout or something. I think Sherry had it suggested that just a quick FAQ or, you know, a brief handout might be very helpful, at least as a first attempt to get everybody on the same page. To that end, I did meet with Doug Hasty, as we discussed in December, and it was decided that interlibrary loan or access services has very specific issues around copyright that don't necessarily apply to the rest of us, because the copyright law has specific sections written for ILL that just don't apply to the rest of us. Similarly with reserves, there's certain things that kick in there that simply are not available to the rest of us because we are not, well, except for AV, we're not officially the reserve department and we're not officially the ILL department. So that said, the question is what could we do that would be collaborative or would be, you know, a mutual background that would help us all, and that's what led up to a draft copy of this handout. This is as much as I can do, a two-sided one-page handout. But if there's something within the context of a two-sided one-page handout that would be more or less helpful, it would be good if you would go over the handout, and if you have any follow-up or suggestions. I don't know if we have time to go over the handout point by point today, or if it's something you just want to take back with you and then get back to the group or to me on if there's clarification or whatever. But the bottom line is there's way too much to know about copyright, so going to another page isn't going to make a substantive difference. So we had talked about doing it as a one-page, you know, everything you would need to know that you could fit on one page, and that's what you have in front of you. At least that's my first pass at it. And I think now, you know, it's the group's place to go ahead and look at it and see if there's specific things that in your lives are affecting you or would make your life easier if they were addressed or whatever. Do you want to take a few minutes and go around the table and just see if there's things that you have specific issues about, or would you rather just take it back with you and come back another time with suggestions? Yeah, Kyle.
Just in terms of my own work, since we're dealing with other countries, copyright laws of other countries come into effect, and that's, you know, a whole other realm.
Not really. Not at all. What you do in the United States is a function of U.S. law, and through just about every other country, through their signing of the Berne Agreement and other trade agreements, you follow the rules of the host country for behaviors that you're doing. If you put up a website in another country, then you would follow their country's laws. But if you're functioning in our country, then you use our laws, and our laws, through all those international agreements, apply. Even countries like Cuba are part of those agreements. There are very few countries, and I can't even name any of them, that are not a part of that agreement. That's why it's specifically on here under number 4. Do apply to most foreign works, those published outside the U.S., all rights afforded to works published in the U.S. More information can be found in Copyright Basics. There is an international copyright section. But by and large, through those agreements, in fact, before we signed the agreement, other countries' stuff would have done a lot worse in the U.S. They had longer terms of protection, and we actually changed our copyright law in 76 and then in the 80s so that we give longer terms. That's why we now have it's almost impossible for something to fall into the public domain. It used to actually, within our lifetimes, go out of copyright, like a patent does. Now nothing ever goes out of copyright in our lifetime, and it's because we changed the U.S. laws to be a lot more protective so that they match, particularly European, but other countries' laws. So by following U.S. law, you're doing what you need to do. It could be a case where there's a weird ringer country, but I don't think any country that any of us have been working in, whether it's in Latin America or Central America or Europe, would fall into that category. Even the Soviet Union is part of the former Soviet Union is part of it. So there's really not much cause to think that they'd be treated differently. I don't know, AV, sound and image, you guys have dealt with other countries. Have you found a country that wasn't part of Bern, no. GATT, GAO, any of the...
The common perception is that, those people don't care, when they want something that we have that's from Cuba. They don't care, they care, but it's the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just hard to get the people to really understand that and accept it,
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It is hard because there's a lot of misconceptions.
Basically, a bit of our difficulty in understanding deals more with people who are interested in some of the material that we have for research purposes, for writing a book, for using, photographing a book and that kind of thing. And so that's where we really have the most difficulty at this point in determining what is okay to do and what isn't.
Right. Well, because you have some preservation room to maneuver, that's what number one is all about, is that the copyright code has specific safe harbors for different things that you could do in a library, and that's why there's nothing to buffer you. The bloody truth is you got to read the copyright law and understand those sections and understand that with respect to reserve activity, there's certain things you can do and that you really that are not protected, just like with ILL, just like with preservation. So understanding what your function or your activity is, and if there is a safe harbor in the copyright law, would be number one. If you don't find a safe harbor, like that's specifically addressed in the copyright law, then you're using fair use. And so number one tells you, first you got to basically go check up on the copyright law so that you can check your activities against those sections, section 108 for preservation, section 107 for fair use. There's different clauses in there, and number one does tell you which ones to be looking out for that are particularly relevant to life in the library. That doesn't mean it's comprehensive, because I certainly don't know everything that you do, but I can surmise, based on, digital production, what most of us run into, that the sections that are going to apply under number one are the ones that you want to pay particular attention to. However, if you don't find safe harbor, then you're using fair use, which is something that an educational institution can use, just like a individual consumer can use. But you have to do a fair use analysis, and that's why number two says you need to investigate the status of what you're trying to do. And if you decide you're going to use the fair use clause to allow your behavior, then you need to do that four factors checklist, which is referenced in the box, to go get that checklist and ask those four questions. And you need to do it for each and every item, because it's not a global thing. It may work for one use, but the next use, that same afternoon, could not pass, and so you can't. Similarly, just because Myra finds that the fair use analysis works in her case, Giovanni or another department can't say, well, Myra did it, so I'm doing it. That's what the don't follow the lemmings on number four of don'ts is that you cannot, copyright is not something that's one size fits all. It's absolutely an it depends law. There's very little that's black or white. Almost all of it is going to be it depends, and you have to look at what you're trying to do and then find the place in the copyright law that either definitely allows it or disallows it, or you have to make a decision on what you're doing and then document the reason. As we talked about at the December meeting, the reason you should care is because at the end of the day, the state, as a state institution, probably will not have any damages assessed. But as an individual doing your job, you could suffer the consequences of violating copyright law. And it's up to each department to understand, in the absence of a university-wide policy or a library-wide policy, then it's incumbent upon each department to start becoming familiar. And it's kind of like with sexual harassment or something. I mean, everybody gets sensitized, but at the end of the day, each department and each supervisor has to understand, you know, what the provisions are, so you know whether the behavior is okay or not. And nobody's going to police you, probably, but if you have a problem, the buck is going to end up stopping there. So it's almost like a buyer beware thing. It's to empower you all to be able to feel more comfortable making decisions within your individual departments.
When we end up being confused is, you know, we have got out on the internet, exploring how people do like New York Public Library and the Smithsonian and those kind of institutions, and we find that they provide whatever it is the person needs for a, you know, COVID zone for a charge. And that's where we get confused by one institution and another.
Well, that's why.
To come up with one, but you said every.
You have to assess it each time.
It's terrible to tell this person, excuse me, this person yes and this person no.
Oh, there they are. Hey! Welcome!
He was standing in the
Hey!
Hi.
We already started the meeting and we were just talking about some basic copyright stuff and what different departments might want to be aware of. And did you, were you able to print out the attachment in the email?
Yes.
Okay. What we're doing is just going over some of the stuff in the handout. With the understanding that nobody in half an hour is going to possibly even begin to uncover everything they need to know, but at least it's a chance that if there's something else people want to see in the handout, you know, that you guys have the opportunity to make a suggestion, or if there's something you don't understand or need clarification of, this would be, you know, ultimately all I can do is provide a very basic handout, but, you know, it's up to each department right now to make sure they have their own sensibility, you know, about what needs to happen to keep that department safe and keep them comfortable with what to do.
Are there other questions specific to it? Does anyone else have a specific question?
Yeah, I would like to know what happened in case, for example, I have a visitor and they affirm that they are going to use that material for educational purposes, that's fine. Okay, you're working in the university, perfect. Everything's perfect. But what happens if they are going to use that for another, you know, personal project? Probably 3 years after, they are going to use for a personal project. Okay, we have already a form about the copyright law permission mm-hmm. and use. Mm-hmm. This is enough for us to say, okay, but at that time we had that form, they signed up, and we can prove with that?
Well, I think, you know, again, we don't have a library-wide or a university-wide policy, mm-hmm. so we're all working in a vacuum. In my department, I document every single case. I keep a file. I don't have that case, but when I clear something, I keep a file on that item. And I will keep it for as long as, you know, we're in business. And what you may want to do is if they accept a copy, if you give them, it's like when you go to the doctor now, you have to sign a form that says you've been given the privacy policy. Maybe you want something like that. Or even you keep a list of your visitor log, and on there you could put a column for, I have seen the policy, and they check it off or something. I mean, you could, it doesn't have to kill you with paperwork, but you, maybe there's some, if you're already doing certain things in your workflow to sign a visitor in, just adding that column, and so that if anybody ever comes and tries to assess your culpability, at least you'd show them that over time you've been trying to give out this handout and you have the visitor sign, and that probably is enough to keep you safe. You know, we wouldn't know until, heaven forbid, it came to that. But, you know, I think in my own philosophy, and that's all I can do, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not an administrator of the library or the university, I can't tell you what policy to follow. But in digital collections, I believe that if I just show good faith effort and I keep a record of good faith effort, we may still get our hands slapped, someone may make us take something down, but I won't get damages because there's good faith. We've tried to do what we could do. And that's my own personal philosophy, and that's the filter I used in preparing this. But it's not my place. I'm not any of your bosses. And I can't tell you for sure what you should do. I'm only trying to give you some suggestions about, you know, in general, what people are saying in our profession, you know, as an ALA copyright scholar, what we're hearing, having been trained and now being part of that team, what we're being told by the ALA Washington office that has an office of intellectual property, sort of best practices that I hear from that. I'm happy to share that, but, you know, none of us are lawyers, and even the lawyers half the time don't know. I went to the university's intellectual property workshop several months ago, and when most of it was about patents, because that's what the university cares about, is patents where they could make some income. But on the cursory copyright section, the lawyer was giving out, I mean, their PowerPoints were just wrong. They had a PowerPoint about the term of duration of copyright, and it said life of the author plus 50. It hasn't been life of the author plus 50 in almost my lifetime. So, I mean, just not that it's, you know, that the university isn't assuming a leadership role in keeping us safe or giving us something to work with. We're on our own, you know, we really are. And all I can do is share with you some of what I've run into as best practices or wisdom. But I think if you show good faith, I don't know what more you can do besides show good faith, you know. And hopefully it'll never come up, you know.
And also the problem that we have always is because generally we have more than one person involved in the, for example, now with the interviews, we have more than one, you know, we have the interviewer, we have the interview, and we have another problem, another person involved in the same item.
And you don't have permission letters from the donor either.
From one of them, but we don't know.
Well, for copyright, if you have multiple authors, you only need permission of one, unless they're making money. The copyright law specifically says, in the case of a multiple authored work, you only need the permission of one to do what you want to do. They can speak for the others, unless you're paying them.
And what happens, for example, we have the interviewer. I know this is very specific.
Right. No, it's because there's a case that has now been found against a library for exposing something through interviews, and they were found culpable, and I don't know if they had damages or they just got a cease and desist, but was it Indiana?
On the lookout for that. Now, we have a couple that are easy.
That was a case where it was an interview between A and B, but in the course of the and A and B had both had given permission for the oral history interview to be added to the archive and made available to other people. But in the course of their discussion, they talked about Party C. And Party C was not happy with the way they were addressed, sued for libel, and the library was found guilty.
And that's happened in many issues also, in many interviews that said, for example, okay, I'm going to give you that information, but please don't publish in any other place. That means that we never can use that. Either if we have the permission of the interviewer.
Right. Right.
Can a Valerie Plame thumbs up in it? Don't.
Don't talk to Michael Novak. Yeah, Susan, what's going on? Hello.
Hi. Sorry, we were late coming in, and we don't know everybody. And this woman in the red sweater was just talking about interviews. Is this a project, an FIU project, is interviews?
Right.
For the library project?
Right. This is a specific
special
collection. Introduce yourself.
Okay. Hi. My name is Veronica Gonzalez. I'm working in the sound and image department with Myra Nimes. She's the head of the department. We are working in a project with the Grammy Grant Foundation. And the idea is digitize and preserve some of our interviews. Most of them are part of the Diaz Ayala collection, and this is Cuban and Latin American popular music. Mm-hmm. Was donated 4 years ago.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay.
Is there anybody else? Should we do another round of introductions?
But you don't know Kyle.
Do you know Kyle? Okay. Okay, why don't we just do a quick round of introductions, starting with Sarah and Susan.
I'm Susan Weiss, a reference librarian here at the North Campus. I'm Sarah Kimmel, distance learning librarian. Hi, everybody.
Hi. Okay, Kyle, since you're right next to Veronica, what do you
get? My name is Kyle Rickus. I'm the coordinator of the Digital Library of the Caribbean.
I'm Tony.
I'm Gail Clement, Digital Collections.
Sherry.
Tony.
Margo and Tony. You might not know me as an electronic resources cataloger.
Giovanni Graciosi, the GIS Center.
Myra.
Myra, hi Myra.
I'm Vicky.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anything else then on copyright that you want to discuss now, or do you want to?
I don't mean to take up time, but I think what the issue Kyle raised is really important, and I don't mean to undermine you, which is so valuable, knowing that as far as a website is located physically within the United States, they weren't really protected. But in the case of the Digital Libraries of the Caribbean, the AGWP with the GIS Center, we're dealing with multiple countries using each other's resources as well. And I think it's an area we might want to look into. For instance, you might get something from Haiti, but it's really from the Dominican Republic, or so on and so forth, but they're just digitizing each other. Are we protected?
Well, the bottom line is you're still using the U.S. law, no matter how you slice it. I'm not telling you you are protected. I'm just telling you that the governing law for you is the U.S. copyright law. You don't have to look at the Dominican Republic law, and you don't have to look at the Haitian law or the fifth party that digitized. If you're the one that is responsible for putting it up on the web and making it available to the public, so you are the publisher, you are the reproducer, then you follow U.S. law. Then you follow U.S. law and you're fine.
Yeah. It is interesting because the D-Log, they digitize their own down there, they send it to
you. Yeah, so in our case, we have them sign a waiver that says that they're responsible for
copyright.
They have liability.
But if you are actually putting it on a website in this country, it may not matter what they say, because you, in fact, are the publisher. Mm-hmm. And in our law, you would have some culpability there. I mean, we wouldn't know until it went to court, heaven forbid, but...
Yeah, but this is a model that a lot of like institutional repositories are following, where they're having people who submit materials sign the copyright waiver so that they will be liable, and hopefully we'll be able to use this responsibly in DLOG as well, because it's being used all around the country.
Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, you follow, if you're functioning in the U.S., you follow U.S. law. I didn't say anything about your protections. I was just trying to clarify which set of laws you have to worry about. Only if you moved your office and started actually doing the putting it up on the web in an office in another country do you observe their laws. Mm-hmm. So I know it sounds confusing because the sources could be from anywhere, but we spent quite a bit of time through the ALA copyright program dealing with international copyright law, and we've had Janice Pilch, who's a pretty well-known leader in international copyright. She's a Slavicist at Illinois, go through quite a bit of this. And what they've emphasized over and over to us is that if you're doing your job in the United States, doesn't matter the source of the materials, you're following U.S. law. That's your governing law. So if the U.S. law says that something isn't allowable or it is, that's the law you need to get to know. I wasn't trying to comment on what your partners are doing in their countries. They're responsible, presumably, in their own countries for their own laws. But as a U.S. person functioning inside the borders of the U.S., the only law you have to worry about is U.S. copyright law. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. That's what I was trying to get to.
Yes.
You don't have to be confused. You know, it's okay to not worry. You don't have to worry about the other country's laws. Does that make sense? I don't know, were there other questions? Do you have a specific case you wanted to go over or share with people? Because we don't understand the...
By going up to Gainesville, meeting them, and seeing the amount of resources they're digitizing under this project. And I saw that there's a few resources that are from multiple countries, and I recall in some instances they weren't sure whether it happened in one country, and then the geography, political geography changed, the boundaries changed, it's now in another country, so whose jurisdiction that is. That was very interesting to me. I'd like to learn more in the future.
Sure. From my understanding on the copyright perspective, unless one of those countries isn't part of these international agreements, however, it wouldn't matter because the international agreements come back to that we use our U.S. laws, whether it was Haiti or Grenada or whatever. Unless one of those countries just isn't a participating country in those the Berne or the GATT or whatever the agreement is. So, there are going to be specific cases, obviously, that each of us know more about because we're functioning in unique areas that other departments aren't. So I don't think it's the job of either me or any one person to understand and rule on everybody else. That's why I'm just trying to do what I can to empower everybody to bring yourself up to speed in your own department for your world. Because we don't have a copyright librarian in the library that's working for all of us. We're all just trying to help each other out. And I was specifically asked by the group to prepare something that might be a starting point or a help, and I'm happy to do that. But, it's not my job to make sure you're complying. I'm just trying to be helpful. And if you find something that's helpful that you think would be helpful to other people in the group, by all means, bring it. That's what this forum is for, is to share, what we're discovering as we do activities in our own departments. So,
I see that this is labeled preliminary draft. Is this meant to be perhaps an official document at some point, or is it up for discussion for revision? Or is it yes,
well, that's why.
Back to your groups?
Right, that's what I was asking at the get-go. Was you're welcome to suggest revisions. The only revision that you're not welcome to do is say, "I want 10 more pages." Mm-hmm. It's a two-sided, one-page document. If you want a longer document, you are most welcome to create one. But for my purposes, I'm more than happy to do. I have volunteered. Sherry had asked at the December meeting if that could be done. I was more than happy to do it. I'm following through today with the first draft of that. And this is a chance to have other people's input. But if you don't like it, you're more than welcome to create your own handout. I'm just trying to respond. This is follow-up for what happened in the December meeting. It was specifically asked and accepted that I would talk to Doug and then do a one-page handout for general use in the library. And this is about as general as I can get without it being useless. But again, everyone's going to have specifics in their own department. Vicki is going to run into stuff. And what Veronica was bringing up about the interviews isn't even necessarily a copyright issue. That's other kinds of rights. And that's something that I think I mentioned. There's other kinds of rights that kick in besides copyright, which is number 3 on the don't list. Don't confuse copyright with other types of rights that can also constrain what we're doing. Intellectual property rights such as trademarks and patents can kick in. Privacy rights, which is what happened when the library in Illinois or Indiana, wherever it was, was found liable. It was around privacy. It was not around copyright violation. The two owners of the content, the interviewer and the interviewee, had signed copyright permission forms. It wasn't about copyright. It was a privacy right violation that the third party was felt that was libelous. So it's not just copyright. So when people, sometimes in their heads, it's another one of those myths that people carry around with them, the copyright is the answer to all our evils, but actually it's only one of a bag of rights that could come into play that we need to be a little bit concerned about. And certainly in Vicki's area, or where you're dealing with special collections or interview type material, diaries, where juicy stuff can come out, our liability is a little more on the privacy side than published stuff that somebody's already published, so it's out in the open. That was.
Now, does that apply to people that are dead?
Privacy does die with the person. However, there is Coretta Scott King had a bunch of rights because as the married person, she could make an argument that her privacy and the quality of her life was affected by untoward behavior by her deceased husband, and it was only upon her death more recently that certain records, I think, will be put out in the open, because bless you, she was very protective of the family's privacy rights, and she could make an argument that if you expose something, an affair that Martin Luther King had or whatever, that you were hurting her privacy rights. So even though his rights die, unlike copyright, privacy rights do die with the person, but there, other people may own some of those rights as well, and those would only die with their death. Yeah, so privacy is a little different. And privacy is also something that's state law, and it's something, it's a tort. You know, it's not copyright law, like it's federal law. So it could differ from one state to the other. There was a question on the ALA Copyright Network just in the last 48 hours that I helped answer, and it was about somebody just assumed that all government documents are in the public domain, and that's absolutely not true. That federal documents, as long as U.S. federal, but for example, Canadian federal, are owned by the Crown, and they're fully copyrighted. So Canadians can't just do what they want with Canadian federal documents. You know, that's a part of their law. And then our state and our local documents are absolutely subject to copyright, because federal copyright law only applies to the federal government. So a state map, a local map, has no, there's no reason to think it's in the public domain. There may be other provisions that allow you to do it, but don't look to copyright to give you your safe harbor. So that's why, again, you go back to number one, and you got to go read it. If you haven't read it recently, because it changes, you know, reading it is going to help you understand where your safe harbors are, or where there might be, you know, points of contention, or where your issues are going to surface. Like I said, I can't possibly, in my little world of digital collections, what we do, I can't anticipate all that, you know, may come up in your departments. You know, I think that's why it's kind of seen as a shared responsibility. Everybody's got to know what's going on. Did you have, Gio, did you, was your hand up, or did you have anything else? Or
hand up.
Are you, no, your hand up? Are you okay?
You must see my brain, because that was like multiple questions, but no, this is not the time. It's really interesting, though.
Let's come back to this and go on to the other part of the meeting.
Sure.
Right. Tony,
okay.
Do you want to take this on?
What has happened is that the digitization process has expanded definitely into other departments. And when many decisions are made to do a digitization project, it involves other people in other departments. Specifically, it involves somebody in systems as to whether there is enough space left on the server to house the information that they want to store on the digital collection. It can involve the people who own the equipment that would do the digitization. And so that there are more parts to this than just saying, wow, I've got this money and I've got this project and it's a go and I'm going with it. So what we really need to do is keep the ideas and the money coming, but be able to make sure that we are really capable of doing it. Because sometimes we will get the money, which in fact, when it's priced out all the way to the end, whether that be price in dollars or price in equipment or price in time, we actually can't do it, because we just don't have the staff or the areas to be able to do it. So one of the things that I wanted to discuss it here is how formal a methodology did we want to introduce to be able to bring forward a project, whether it involves the digital collection library specifically or just part of what is equipment that's in there, or does it involve systems, and check it all the way through before we go out and sign our name on the bottom line and say, yes, we're going to do it, give me the money. What is your feeling on that, Kyle?
Well, it just sounds to me like you're bringing up, that brings up another problem, which is if this university does want to be committed to having people develop such projects, the university needs to be committed to actually developing the infrastructure to support them too. So it brings up the question of, yeah, we have a systems department, we have a certain amount of server space, a certain amount of bandwidth within the building, but if we do want to encourage digital projects to flourish in the FIU libraries, we might need to consider actually improving a lot of that infrastructure and personnel issues, bringing more programmers in and things like that.
Yeah. Well, you see, at this time, the only way we would be able to bring more programmers in is either to enlist help from UTS, which probably is in the same situation that we are, or the grant, the donation, whatever it is, would have to bring in salary dollars to hire the person. That's the situation that we're finding ourselves in, that we have committed ourselves to some things that it turned out in the end were extremely difficult to do, not impossible. So I just don't want expectations to rise very high for the library to say, yes, we're going to do this, and it turns out that in fact we can't do it.
Now, actually, this conversation actually works together very well, because in fact, as I understand, if given the infrastructure problems, the broad ones that you're raising, if these things exist, then all the more reason for a checklist or some other process at the very beginning, so that we know up front either what we need to do or that it just may not be doable.
Well, even with grants, you know, it's not like that's just an unlimited well. You know, you take any grant agency, whether it's NEH or the state LSTA or IMLS, and they're not going to fund unlimited grants from the FIU library. So when they put out their call in February, or this year it's March, right now we have the reality that we could have three different departments all thinking they're writing an IMLS grant, and we wouldn't know that two others are. And we may not even know, and you know, Tony Downs or whoever is expected to sign on the dotted line may not know really until it's too late that we're cannibalizing ourselves to, you know, that we have three different competing grants coming out of the building. And there's no process with, you know, with checkpoints along the way. And that can be counterproductive if we don't all have a chance earlier on to know who might have the intent to apply for a particular program or not.
It's what it is. I can guarantee you that I will not sign a grant now unless I know. I will read the grant, be reading it very, very carefully. And if it looks like it affects another department, that and you don't have documentation saying that you've worked with that department, and that's okay, I'll stop it right then and there. But then why would you have done all that work? So this is something that we want to do up front,
right,
as you're
exactly
going through it.
The more we coordinate.
Sherry, you have something to say.
Well, I had a question, and then another point too. One, though, first, I think also that figures into what you're saying, Tony, is the sustainability of the project after the grant funds are over.
Yes,
really good point. So, and we need to really think about that, because I think we've gotten started in some things in the past that we didn't plan. Too well for the year or two out when the grant was funds coming were finished. But the other question is my understanding, and maybe I'm wrong, and we need to review the charge of this group originally, but that grant proposals were supposed to come. This group was to serve as a forum for the initial
discussion
and review, exactly. Mm-hmm. Even before any paperwork, anything was done, it's just if you had a seed idea for something to bring it up here. Mm-hmm. That was my understanding.
Yeah, that would be helpful. I know, but again,
there's
no binding. You know, unless you guys make it so, there's nothing binding about the.
But isn't that I mean, I think if we don't. Once a committee is charged or a group is charged, if we don't refer and follow the rules or the charge as written or revise it,
right,
we stand to lose. Charging a committee stands to lose a lot of credibility.
Right. I agree.
Right, but it can't. It's not the committee's responsibility to do that.
Well, I think it's the chair of the committee's responsibility, or it would seem to me, if you have a charge, to try to make sure that the committee is operating within its charge.
I don't agree. I, for example, whether it's Gail or I who's the chair of this, I don't think it's my job to go around to everybody in the organization and find out whether they are.
No. There are three ADs in this room right now who, in fact, everybody in the library reports to one of the three of us. That should be the first step, that the person should know, I should know if Vicki is going forward for a grant. She's going for a grant that would involve a digital project. Vicki, you must come to this to this meeting and do the presentation, I will not conference of going any further until it's approved at this
right.
time.
Okay.
That helps a lot.
But that's what we're saying. Some of it is administrative. You can't, you know, I can't make somebody declare.
No, you misunderstood what I was trying to say was that I think any of us on this committee are bound by the charge, but I guess I would look or expect the chair to make sure that we all try to abide by that charge.
And remind people, if Susan wanted to come up with a grant and had the concept, I'm sure that she would tell Scott, and Scott would tell me, and then Susan would do a presentation here.
Right.
This isn't from grassroots getting the grant, because I catalog things that DCC has done. Okay. But we're working right now on getting a workflow, and it includes some special collections and GovDocs and that too that we interact with. But the thing is we're kind of working this through what happens first and who communicates and what may that early on, when Gail is thinking about a project or something, she's going to talk to Sue and maybe Sue and I, whatever, and say, well, this collection is going to be mostly photographs. We don't need an item level. We don't need item level records, just collection record and that. So it's as far as cataloging needs, and you're talking about communicating with what other resources are required. So that's going to happen early on, and then we're going to talk about what's the sequencing going to be for when the market for cataloging gets done. And that's we're working on these kinds of things now, so that as far as things that the digital center does, that we're going to have kind of a workflow and communication thing more or less formalized. We're working on that. So
right, but the bottom line is that nothing would ever get out the door.
Right.
Either by Tony Schwartz or Tony Downs is never going to look at a grant that came through that didn't have a cataloging piece addressed, and that you and Sue, largely as a department head, has to have blessed.
Yeah.
There already had to have been an agreement between the departments
right.
about what money would go into the grant. In fact, last year I remember LASIK had an idea from a faculty. They wanted to go for this British Archives grant, and they asked me to come in on it and bid basically for the digitization part of it. It was that Christian Youth Movement in South America grant, I don't know if you remember. And I had a certain price, but I didn't even want to speak for cataloging. So Sue and I talked about how it was going to be trilingual cataloging and yada, 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 and those were very expensive unit costs. And so we put it in the grant, and then the person in the library that was going to be the PI was concerned because the price tag was so high it would put the grant out of business. But Sue and I both said, well, then that's too bad, because this is the actual cost of doing this work, and we're not in a position to give out a lot of pro bono on this. You know, there's other match, there's other cost share, but where there's real hours of a cataloger's time. And so that was a case where we had a lot of control about the fate of the workflow, because we were able to stop basically by putting a price tag that we thought was very realistic, but we couldn't afford to give it away. And so that the checks and balances basically worked in that case, because the cost of doing the cataloging was X. And if the person that was trying to push this grant through said, but that's too high, I need money for all these other things, I can't pay all this to cataloging, that broke the, so the workflow can work very effectively. Not that we want to put a grant, but if it's not viable, if there isn't enough money in the pot and it's going to really hurt the library to pull this off, then that's what the checks and balances are all about, is to work it through and see what the costs would be and where the money would go. And if it's not a go, it's not a go. If it's not healthy for the library, that process, that honest process should expose.
Okay. My question is then, which came up with my kind of comes out of my request that I made to you about bringing up a kind of web presence for special collections, because we have collections in that no one knows about. These are things that clearly would not go to Gail's shop, because we will never pass the copyright hurdle, and so we just want the finding aids and some kind of graphic gone up. And I have approached you and George, and you recommended that I speak to Mara. One of the things that brought to me and this whole discussion here is that clearly maybe what we just need is a memory prompt to all of us, department heads and everything else, that if you want to do an internal thing that doesn't go out as a grant, that doesn't go through DL shop, these are the people you contact and this is the process you follow. At the same time, if you want to go out there into the big wild world and you want to do it with a grant, these are the steps. I think maybe that would be something, it may not necessarily be the role of this committee, maybe the role of whoever, whatever.
Well, I was thinking that too, Vicky, just to segue into what you were saying.
Yeah.
Is a form. It would seem to me that we're just really talking around, talking about having a simple form that everybody checks off, and as a reminder too of, oh yeah, I'm interested in this grant, but there is cataloging involved. Did I check with them?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
One of the ways though that things fall apart is we don't have enough lead time, and we've had cases certainly where somebody's been trying to get a grant out the door giving the rest of the library very, very short time to react to it. So we need to build in something in the way of sufficient lead time for the kinds of review that we want to do.
We have rarely turned down any grants. However, regretfully, the libraries receive a lot of their money from organizations that do not fund overhead. Not only do they not fund the overhead, they want us to pay for part of the grant. And it reaches a certain time when we actually don't have the money to pay for the grant. It's not, everybody says, oh, a grant, we have all this money coming in. But almost all of ours involve cost share, which means we have to take money out of our operating budget that would go to you in a different format to pay for the grant. So we're paying into the pot as well as the grant paying into the pot. When it is beneficial to the libraries, of course, we are very, very happy to do it. We do reach times when it is not. Suddenly, the scale tips the other way, and we aren't big enough, we aren't rich enough, and we just will not be able to afford that at this time. So I'm just giving you a heads up that if you see these things, which goes forward with the idea of the time element, if you see something that you're at least bit interested, maybe it's the time to go through the checklist. And what I'm looking on, it would be equipment systems, cataloging.
We actually had this checklist when we had this group in another incarnation. The original group had a checklist, and there was the technical feasibility group, and it had a series of questions around the technology and the cataloging and whatever. And then there was the content group that had content-related questions. And we could just repackage, you know, because those were originally this group didn't exist as an advisory. It was more advisory to the Digital Center back when we actually thought under Dr. Miller that the Digital Center had more discretion in the kinds of projects. Inevitably, it's worked out that we inherited most of our marching orders and we don't have as much room to play. But the bottom line was still that we had a checklist around, you know, how do you know that a project is worthy around content? And we actually used that when we evaluated the two Department of Ed grants a couple of years ago, because we had an Access Indonesia grant that was coming out of GIS, and we had a Digital Library of the Caribbean grant coming out of LASIC, and Digital Library of the Caribbean actually passed muster, and we went ahead and blessed it. And I think Access Indonesia didn't necessarily make all the points. It was actually coming out of a professor in public affairs or public administration, and there was just an add-on for the library, and it actually didn't pass muster so on some of the content questions that we had. So we could look at those questions again. I mean, in that case, it helped us make it a tough decision about which grant was a better fit for, like you're saying, with the library.
Yeah, would you do me a favor and send those to me? If you could put them together on that, and then what I will do, or you could do it yourself, send it to the entire committee and ask for feedback, and people can feedback electronically, and we'll have it on the agenda for the next meeting to double-check.
Yeah, and then you could reformat that into, you know, whatever the group wants. But I think the questions were already laid out.
Good.
Related to all this time issue, and I'm hearing what everybody's saying, so interesting. So in order for this committee to have an opportunity to review whoever applications are on the table, first they have to be knowledgeable of the RFP that's out. And my question is, can we review somebody, or does somebody have notice from all these agencies about RFPs that are applicable?
Well, sponsored OSTRA does. OSTRA has a list.
Yeah.
They have all the program deadline.
Right.
So well, you have to pick and choose through up there.
Well,
meaning, let's say that GIS is interesting and so is DLOC and digital collections, and we might be turning our wheels separately, whereas we could be pulling together. But if there is an announcement, hey, there's an RFP from my MLS, whoever's interested in this thing together.
I think to do it on a voluntary basis is a great idea. To make it somebody's job would probably not
right.
be as good idea. Because
again,
it's just one department trying to work with another. None of us
if this
reports
works
to the other.
Properly, the first thing that should happen when someone's interested in it is they should send out an email to the entire community saying, I'm thinking of going for this grant. I'm going to be contacting you to see if it's sort of to go through and pass, as you would say, pass muster on the items that, of the review items. That this is appropriate. And at that time, somebody else would say, well, you know, that's a really good idea. Let's go and talk to it together.
Right. And then how far in advance did you envision the PI or co-PI coming to this advisory group?
As soon as possible.
ASAP.
But this group isn't meeting that regularly.
But, that,
so
but the minute a grant comes up of that importance, that would cause that, the group will meet.
I think the idea is that on some of these large ones, you need to be working so far ahead in advance that it's probably you need to be working before the formal announcement comes up. Because I mean, for something like IMLS, when is the announcement made?
Oh, it was made in the fall, and we knew. I mean, it's a standing order. It's almost
right.
always been February 1st or 15th, depending on which program. This year, they announced it was going to be pushed into March. But the bottom line is, it's always about the same time of year. NEH, you know, there's usually a July or an August, and then a December. I mean, most of them follow LSTA, the state grant, usually is March 15th. You know, it's typically about the same calendar. Now, sometimes you get the NSF. I know Kyle and I have talked about the Endangered Languages Program. But even NSF will send out, you'll know 3 to 5 months ahead of time that there's a call, a program announcement. You know, the weird ones are when you get something like we dealt with in NEH last year that came out of Cuban Resources Institute. And it wasn't on our radar screen, but they built in a digital component into a humanities grant. So that may be a case where it's not on our radar screen. It's only when the faculty come in that they're writing a grant, but they want a digitization, like a digital library piece to it. It was for Cuban people, papers of ex-prisoners from Cuba, and they have a collection that they've been trying to hustle and get donated to the university. So that was all being led by, you know, the faculty, the research faculty. We weren't the drivers. We were reacting as it was. And that was an imperfect situation, but it could happen where the lead time was quite short because it came from the Cuban Research Institute. By the time they vetted their process and it came to us, I think we were inside of a month. I mean, I think we were in about a 3-week window. So that was a case where I guess we'd have to immediately go to Tony and say, is it worth rallying to try and see if we can pull this off? Or do we just have that more inflexible approach where, sorry, it didn't meet our 2-month turnaround time, we're dead, you know. And we barely got it out as it was, and we didn't have the layers of additional process that we're now talking about.
Couldn't you do a lot of that through via email as well, though? I mean, I can see where the difficulty might be to get the committee together, but if someone that has an interest in something, you could email the group and...
That was my concept. The minute you have an idea or someone approaches you about it, if you email the group right away, I guarantee you that the people who will take a look and say, oh, what's involved in here? And Margo might be going straight to Sue and say, Sue, I think you need to talk to Giovanni because he's working on this grant that's going to put cataloging up to Wazuzu on us. Or right. Tell me, you would immediately say that, oh, that's going to require some sort of equipment and so many hours. Do they have staffing time to go into that? It will give that reaction, and we can do it electronically. If it's something that's really big, that's going to cause us big troubles, I'll call the group together. I mean, and those who can make it can make it. And my guess is, if you're interested or you feel that you're going to be impacted by it, either you will make it, or you will have a representative there, or you will let me know that you have a problem.
But shouldn't that be the responsibility of the chair of the committee? In other words, rather, if Myra, for example, because I'm
sure.
doing it, has an idea of something, would rather than her doing the whole thing, send it, I mean, to, for example, to Gail, and then Gail, I'm just thinking of how you coordinate, pull the whole thing.
That's an off. That's
why don't we decentralize this so that the AD who works with the individual takes responsibility rather than the
especially
chair.
If it's someone who's not on this committee. If they're on
yeah,
the committee,
yeah,
I see
right.
absolutely no reason. It's just as easy to flip in and do a mass email to everybody involved. And at that time, if Gail would feel that, whoa, this really needs to have a meeting, then bingo. And if she needs a director to help her make sure that people understand how it's important it is, that's fine.
I'm drawing a distinction, and this is off the top of my head, so people who've got contrary ideas, it's fine. I think there's a difference between chairing this committee and being responsible for the kind of organizational collaboration or interdepartmental review or something which is supposed to happen and have good follow through on it. So I think that ADs have the responsibility for the organizational collaboration, not the person who's chair of the committee. It's just too much. I mean, I think it's just too much to put on that one individual.
Well, and I have no bite. I'm a peer.
Yeah.
I'm not an advisor. I'm not a supervisor. I have no... If I see the two departments need to talk to each other, at the end of the day, there's not much I can do. All I can do is come and talk to the ADs and say, you know, I think we've got two departments where there's some overlap or possible duplication. I'm happy to analyze it and give you feedback,
yes.
Of course, because that's as an advisory group. But at the end of the day, I'm a peer. I got nothing on anybody. And I don't necessarily think I want to. You know, I mean, I certainly see enough collaborative grants come through and I've reviewed them. I can certainly help sniff things out, just like everybody here can sniff certain things out. But it's not.
But it should go through the AD first because
right.
it's going to have an impact on maybe other areas outside the purview of this group as well.
And you may not realize
so,
it. You need
so
that broader vision.
They need to go through the AD. I agree with you.
Yeah, it seems to me, for example, if Gail says she wants to do such and such, I would send out a note. I mean, what I'm thinking about is I would send out a note to the ADs and I probably everybody on this committee and say Digital Collection Center wants to do such and such, and then I'd throw in a little bit of information. And then
but then someplace along the line this checklist should
right.
be done at the same time simultaneously.
The checklist, yeah, but the checklist is probably 85% complete. I'm glad you remember that the Digital Collection Center charge, this thing by now must run 13 or 14 pages, and it does have all of this stuff that got worked out some years ago. So we can just do some cutting and pasting and end up with that.
And, you know, and I don't even mind making sure that at a minimum I complete a checklist. Just as the chair of the committee, I'm happy to complete a checklist over any proposal that comes. So we know we at least have one body that's tasked to the job of completing the checklist. But I can't guarantee I catch everything because, again, I'm not the boss of the people. I may not have full disclosure available to me. I may not see it all because I don't have that administrative role. I'm just a peer. But I'm happy to give it a peer review and then provide that review to the decision makers as you decide whether it's something that you want to have two departments collaborate on or whatever. I mean, I think, you know, if that would be a helpful role, that might be a better fit because it's a peer review, and that's all I am, is a peer in this case. I'm happy to look at it. But
let's say first that we have 85% of this checklist probably already in form, and second, that it's the respective AD's job to see the follow-through on all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one question is, who's got a grant coming up that we don't know about? If in fact, for example, somebody raised the possibility of we could have two or three IMLS proposals all in the works. Is this something that we need to worry about now in terms of
I know of no IMLS grants that anybody's working on. That doesn't mean they are. I just don't know of it.
Is Jennifer coming up for one?
I'm not aware of anything right now.
No, we're just reviewing comments of a previously submitted one.
Right.
So you're not
submitting. But it's not outstanding, nothing being considered.
Do you have one in mind?
There was meetings around it, and nothing's coalesced with the Open River people.
So we may not then have something that is going to require attention in the next few weeks. Okay.
Actually, there was something that isn't exactly grant funded, but well, it's not applying for a new grant, but there's a possibility that I could repurpose some of DLOC's money that's been budgeted to go in different places to actually support digitization, like in-house at FIU, which, you know, I think might be a good idea in 3 years, the next two or 3 years of the grant, which, you know, could go through a similar process of vetting and seeing if it would actually be possible.
That sounds great, but let me see if I understand. This is money
that we already have.
That you have, and it's money that you have, and in fact, you may be able to spread it around.
I wouldn't say spread it around.
It would still have to go through the vetting, because he would have to choose the areas that it would be appropriate for him to invest money in.
So
then we have the problem that Sherry's already mentioned, is what he's doing sustainable when the money dries up? Do we want to keep doing it? Are we actually developing an area of a...
Give me an example.
But excuse me one second, though, too, before we go on with that. If I could just follow up with Kyle. The library really is kind of... is not central to this grant. LAC is the PI.
Yes.
Someone in LAC is the PI, so I think you'd have to start... probably have to go there first to make sure that they whatever you wanted to propose would be right, and then it could come to this group.
Right.
But it would need to be vetted through LAC first.
I have an entire like world of people that would have to make very mad and convince them that I could do this, but just bring it up as a theoretical thing.
But wait, is the idea that there would be Latin American or Caribbean projects which you could then outsource to one or more of the people within the library to help out on? I'm just not sure where you're coming from on this.
Well, maybe I could present on it at the next meeting. I could talk about the actual infrastructure of DLOC and talk about the possibility of what I'm proposing, because I think it might actually take longer than the amount of time we have left in the meeting.
All right.
That'd
be
great. Let us know.
All right. So
we have an agenda item for the next meeting.
Giovanni?
Just on what Michelle was saying, that's another really important topic or issue, because it might be a PI, a library-based PI, but it could also be environmental sciences PI and asking the GIS to participate with their grant. But there might be another group outside and inside the university who's also applying for the same. So I don't know how you'll screen that, or how you say no to him or her, or yes to
that
him.
Doesn't really have anything to do with us, though.
Well, it would if it, like in the case of actually the TICFIA thing, it was LAC was the PI of the DLOC, and this person in public affairs was the PI, but both of them came to the library for a piece of it, and there was an honest process where we looked at both, and there was a decision made that there was no question that the DLOC had the right pieces in place to be, to support it in the way that was being proposed. And I think the issue was around that Access Indonesia grant, which, so our process did allow us to vet both, and we didn't have much time to vet either of them, but it worked. I think the process worked. So I think, there may not be a lot of time, but if there's some vetting, it's better than nothing. And, Vicki and I, having gotten the CR, actually DSILA, the last digitization grant with the Grammy, came from Cuban Research Institute. So it's actually happens quite a bit, it seems, that it's a faculty-originated grant, and they may be the PI, but there's a huge component around library digitization, and that component has to be addressed within this group, because inevitably, like Vicki was the one that was approached by CRI to do the digitization, but she had to bring in Digital Center, and then the immediate thing was, well, there's cataloging implications here. I think the bottom line is no department should be feeling authorized to speak for another department in this establishment. No library department should be speaking for, GIS should not be speaking for cataloging, or Digital Center shouldn't be speaking for special collections. We have to have that dialogue to make sure that all the departments have their chance to, control their own destiny. because the last thing we want is to one department to promise the goods that another department's supposed to come up with. I mean, that's not a good, you know, way to do business together. So I think you still have to vet it, even if it comes from an outside faculty, unless, you know, you work something out with your own AD where it's only GIS and there's no other implication, not to systems, not to anybody else, you know. But that would be between you and your AD, I guess, at that point, you know.
But the process that we're going in there should be the process no matter where it goes, even if it is totally within one unit. It is a process that we're putting the shape. It should go through the committee no matter what. I think that we have gotten that far, that we need to get the list out, the checklist off, be sent to everybody here in the committee, because you all have an interest in this and you all have a little bit of experience with it right now from your particular point of view, to take a look at it to see if it covers everything that you have found in working on your grants that it affected, so that we have the best list possible. And then at that stage, we will put the list out, and I will make sure that it goes out to all librarians, that they understand that if they are even have an inkling of doing a grant, they need to get in touch with their ADs, and they need to get that list to make sure that they understand before they even go for it what is actually involved.
But you're only talking about a grant.
Any project that involves digitization, even if you think you can do it totally within your own shop.
Because I'm about to get into trouble.
Well, Vicki, it's not going to be the first time with you. I swear, girl.
I've approached the Office of the President, and I've approached Josefina's shop for us to work on a project, also Bill Store, to coordinate and see what we can do to create digital images of events that are historically important.
Okay. The question
to the President.
Right, to the President. That's fine. But the first thing that comes on that,
which is why I went to them first.
Where are you going to store it? Immediately you're looking at systems.
No, I mean, that's one of the things, because I spent 3 hours looking for one photograph of the President with Diaz Balart and the President, the governor signing, because when he was speaking at the opening of the law school, he wanted this particular image behind him, and he remembered that image, and he had to have the little girl standing up on the left hand side, and it took me 4 hours to find the photograph.
You're right, though. I mean,
you know, and that's the kind of stuff that.
Yeah,
you know.
And there's something that it's probably a very good item. They might even find some money to do it, to do the physical work.
Right.
They might even be able to buy you some equipment. I don't know. But, I mean, they've got to know in systems that practically how much
right.
is this? How much space is it going to take up? Is it going to be kept
and
right. cataloged?
Catalog.
Well,
right.
and one thing that I was going to tell you guys, too, is that tomorrow, Gail and Sue and I have a meeting, and we have a bunch of questions. But one of the things is I started doing, I got systems through UTS to get Microsoft Project. And so UTS had this that they just had to get. And so I have now installed on my computer and got kind of a timeline and sequencing and who does what. You know, have you heard of Microsoft Project?
Yeah.
And so we're using that. And it's not perfect. Like, I have to do one day. It takes one day to search or do this. And it's kind of stuff for the timeline things. You just ignore that it's on day sequences. But I think it's really helpful, so I'm using that to help us organize, and then I'm going to verify, you know, is this right? Do you feel comfortable with this? And then I'm going to go to Vicki, and I'm going to go down to Sherry and say, and this is how we relate to you guys. Is this where you feel like this is okay? Do you feel okay with this? And so I'm going to use that, and I don't know if anyone else would be interested in that, but I can show you how I'm using that.
The other issue there, too, would be, does it require any programming in terms of a database?
Well, the first thing is
creating a database.
So,
Because
I want to make sure that we don't have to fund it, that they fund it somewhere between Josefina and Shop.
Doesn't matter who funds it.
Right.
Doesn't matter if it's funded or not.
do you have the resources that are necessary in order to do it?
Yeah.
So,
the expertise. Are you going to have to hire someone?
Well, yes, I've invited that. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You need to put something together for the next, the next meeting. Yeah. There's no time frame on this, right?
No.
So, for the next meeting, you need to be able to go through that checkpoint and say, this is what I'm going to go forward and ask for. And then somebody might be able to tell you that, well, you lowball that number and you highball that number. Switch them or something like that. Because we all are developing little areas of expertise, but we still have a lot to learn.
What's the matter, Mike?
I'm thinking we are involved in another project with the president, too.
This is my confession time.
I just realized, as far as I know, it only involves work in our department.
But still?
But it is, you know.
It should come out. You should put it together. And bring it forward.
Like, what is it?
Yes, I had a great idea, which is great. It is a great idea. Put together a CD.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Of the music, sung by human singing American songs and American singing human songs, either in English or Spanish. And it's strictly like a gift to donors or to solicit money. You know, like Channel 2 does, if you give 100, give you one CD. That kind of thing. So anyway, that's the project. It really impacts on our work, but I don't see how they're going to have the CD done. We still have to get the music, but the CD is being done outside. You know, they're going to pay for someone to do it.
So you just identify.
And put in the records and document it, because there's a lot of documentation that's needed.
I don't think that part makes sense because we aren't doing the work. You're just doing pulling the items, identifying the items, but not actually doing the work. It's not residing on any other.
Right.
You're not doing the dubbing and the copying.
Also, is part of the the legal department is taking care of the code.
Let me ask a couple of things about bringing this to a close. We know that Gail and or I are going to send out what amounts to the various checklists.
Correct.
Now, we could, the collections committee, not this group, but the collections committee is going to meet next on the March the 7th. We could meet this group, digital group, we could meet as early as a month from today, if you wanted to go over review the checklist.
I think we definitely have to. I would be going to review the checklist. Vicki's going to be making her presentation with the check, going through the checklist she can with the project that she wants to approach the president and Josefina's office with. I think Myra's covered.
Okay, and if you have any changes or additions without going past the page limit to the copyright handout, I guess you could just email them to me and I can concatenate them, and so next meeting you'll get just the final copy. Does that sound okay? And Kyle, do you want to talk about your stuff in a month, or do you want to?
If you want to chip in on, if you find out more about, we'll call it offshoots of DLOC, and want to be on the agenda, just let either Gail or I know which on the agenda.
Yeah.
And if you want to wait till later in the spring, whatever.
So the earlier the better. So no, it's actually possible if it's worth my trouble to try to change the way things are with the other project partners.
Sure.
Because it would be a big headache on my end.
Well, it would.
But it could be worth it for you if we actually end up developing more content here in house.
All right.
On the checklist that you mentioned that will be on the agenda, if you get it done ahead of time, would you send that out? In other words, so we would have time to review it?
Mm-hmm. I was hoping that's what I was expecting.
That's kind of standard.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Great, thanks. I'll probably have this audio up on the DCC website. I'll probably just make a section for drag, and I'll just start putting our minutes in audio format up there. If you have a colleague or a pal mm-hmm. that missed the meeting that wants to know what we talked about, that way they can get the whole thing.
Thank you all. Thank you, Biscayne Bay.
Thanks, ladies.
Margo, we're going to...